So I'm happy that neither of us are Russian today.
Or, well, we were Russian yesterday because we didn't do the show. We were scratched, healthy scratched.
I'm happy that neither one of us are of Russian heritage today, because based on our usual performance on this podcast, we wouldn't be here. We would be a healthy scratch.
Yeah, like we were yesterday, and maybe one more time this week, although I doubt it. Do you buy it, by the way? Because it's a conversation that a lot of Canadian hockey fans have been having all week long. Why Neil Yakupov? Why two games? And why not someone like, I don't know, Taylor Hall, who's been a turnover machine this year?
I put that out there. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a case of culturism or racism or what have you about Yakupov being the scratch instead of one of the good old Canadian boys. But you have to admit that it is more convenient to scratch the Russian, the brash Russian, the Russian who stereotypically we know doesn't play defense.
He doesn't.
Versus scratching one of the good Canadian boys who stereotypically play hard at both ends of the ice and never simply just wave at tying goals like Taylor Hall did in Toronto.
Here's the thing. For how many years now? Three? No one has been concerned about wins and losses with the Edmonton Oilers. There's only been one question that's been asked. And I think it's legitimate when you're rebuilding and, you know, putting together a nucleus and readjusting and rebuilding a franchise. You only ask one question. Are the kids getting better? Like, that's all we asked. Are Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, are they getting better? And I'll ask you now. Now that Dallas Eakins has said, you know, we're not a young team anymore. This is a team that's about winning. This is a team not about, you know, developing. And you know, this is a team that's not in potential. This is a team that is in actual mode. As they are right now, by definition of the head coach, are the kids getting better? I think if we're honest with ourselves and we look at their game right now, I think the answer is no. They're not.
What are the aspects of their game that you think have not grown in proportion to their age?
There are too many quote-unquote junior hockey mistakes, things you get away with in junior. Like, for example, things you get away with in junior that you can't get away with at the NHL. See a little toe drag yesterday by Taylor Hall? He's been doing that since he played with the Windsor Spitfires. Does it work at the NHL level? Sometimes, but most times, no. Mm. It just doesn't. It's the same mistakes that are being made over flybys on dumping. It happens consistently. And Jordan Eberle was guilty of that last week against the New Jersey Devils. A little dump in, a little tap on the pants, just fly by and curl back. It happens so consistently that you say to yourself, well, how come these guys aren't being made, quote unquote, accountable? Why is, you know, Devin Dubnyk, who hasn't had a great season, and why is, you know, Neil Yakupov, why are these the guys that are feeling the brunt of the criticism when it's not that top line? When it's not, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who wears a green jacket at 9 under in the NHL. Right? Why is it not Taylor Hall? Why is it not Jordan Eberle? That if Dallas Eakins really wanted to send a message, and let's be honest, there are plenty of blemishes on Neil Yakupov's game, and I understand why Neil Yakupov could be sat down for a couple of games. Listen, Dallas Eakins did the exact same thing with Nazem Kadri with the Marlies. Now, the stakes were a little bit lower then was with the AHL as opposed to the NHL, but he has done this before with young players. Okay, so this isn't new territory for Dallas Eakins.
And I actually think that what he did was smart because, I mean, face it, it's been a horrible offensive season for Yakupov. On top of that, he's the leading goal scorer from last year who is on the third line this year. And you could make the argument, and you can even see it when you watch him, that the depression, the negativity that's crept into him offensively has bled into over other parts of his game. So you sit him down and you have him process this.
The thing is, too, yeah, this is where you really have to know the player. Because, as we said before, a pat on the back and a kick in the ass are about, what, 2 feet different from each other.
Right.
So is he going to pout or is he going to digest it and say, it's a pill that goes down sideways, but I have to swallow it and I need to be better?
And that's the real gamble, because if you read Yakupov's quotes after the first scratch.
But don't you sort of give, you know, a Russian kid who, you know, English isn't his first language, don't you give him a mulligan on a lot of these quotes?
A mulligan on saying I'm still gonna play my game.
Yeah. Listen, he was like this. He was like this in Sarnia as well in the OHL. I was talking to someone. Let me find this text. Oh, where did I put it? Where is it?
Merrick's looking for text.
For text. I know. I'm just grabbing my phone here. Where is
looking
it?
For text.
Where did I put it? Fucking
he
to someone.
He's got his phone in his hand and he's scrolling
so
through all his texts.
Boring.
Messages.
Ah, here we go.
Hey, look here.
Here we go.
Drew Remender.
This is
texting Merrick during the game.
No. I'm not texting Drew Remender during the Sharks game. By the way, Sharks and St. Louis Blues tonight. Marquee matchup. We'll talk to Bernie Frederick a little bit later on the podcast.
Indeed.
Okay, so this is from someone in and around. I'm going to get specific, the Sarnia Sting organization. And I asked, you know, are you surprised with what's happened with Neil Yakupov and Dallas Eakins? And this is what I got back. The Eakins-Yakupov situation doesn't surprise me. He freelanced in junior and did whatever he wanted, but was allowed to because he put up the big numbers. On and off the ice, he normally wants to run his own schedule. Doesn't necessarily mean any harm by it. It's just what he's used to. And now all of a sudden, he's confronted with a situation where you have a very strict disciplinarian, certainly when it comes to health and fitness, in Dallas Eakins, who demands certain things out of you. This is new territory for Neil Yakupov in North America, right? And let's not, and you know what, another thing, in defense of the young Edmonton Oilers, how many coaches have they had?
Yeah.
Right? McTavish, Quinn, Rennie, Kruger, Eakins. Like, has Jordan Eberle not had five coaches already in his career? This is shades of Steve Yzerman when he started, who one day turned to his assistant coaches and said, you know, can you imagine how good a player I'd be if I had one coach as opposed to four coaches to start my career? Like, different systems, different philosophies, every single way.
Years later, Steve Yzerman is now in favor of having many, many coaches over many, many years because he's allowed to change his mind. I'm looking at the Sarnia Sting operations staff, by the way.
No.
I'm putting my money that your source is Dr. John Vargo, club physician. True or false?
I can confirm that is false.
Oh, okay. Protecting John Vargo, are you?
Well, you know me and the doc. Yeah, we go way back.
Overall, it's been really interesting to see how opinions have changed about this Edmonton team when they go from being on paper to being on the ice, isn't it? Like, even the Devan Dubnyk defense corps has decided to drop their arms and turn tail and run away from him based on this stretch of games that he's had the biggest season. I mean, and he'll get lit up again tonight because it's the Penguins.
Yeah.
What do you do? What do you do if you're the Edmonton Oilers with this goaltending right now? Do you just chalk it up to the fact that the team in front of them is awful? Or do you believe that there is a goaltender out there that could somehow change and shift the paradigm for this team defensively?
Why do you think James Reimer's playing tonight? And this is still under the banner of this is an Edmonton conversation.
Do you mean it's a showcase?
Don't you think? I thought it was win and you're in. If I'm Edmonton and I'm feeling that horrible about my goaltending, and clearly they are, like when you have, you know, McTavish, who made the play for Bernier, made the play for Schneider in the offseason, openly mused when he was asked about his net mining situation. Well, if you have to ask the question, then I guess you already have your answer. It doesn't, like if you're Devan Dubnyk, you're not filled with support from the organization. But here's the problem. And here's the challenge, and here's the threat. Yesterday on Hockey Central, I was filling in for Millard, and we had Mike Smith on, Phoenix Coyotes netminder. And how many times do we look at, you know, Mike Smith and say, yeah, you know what, big guy, athletic, great at handling the puck, but he's never going to be, say it with me, an NHL goaltender. Well, look who is a legitimate NHL goaltender and one of the top Canadian netminders
in
the world.
Right,
in the right situation. Now, when you look at something like the size and athleticism of Mike Smith and Devan Dubnyk, they're pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, Mike Smith handles the puck a hell of a lot better than Dubnyk does, but Mike Smith handles the puck a hell of a lot better than a lot of goaltenders do. Here's the fear if you're the Oilers. If you give up on him now, and another team is going to take a chance at him, do you risk sending the next Mike Smith to another team?
Well, it all depends if the other team has the next Sean Burke as their goaltending coach.
And they might.
It's beyond the Tippett system. Burke did with Smith's game that helped make him the goalie he is today.
But that all depends on the goaltending coach. Like for Columbus last year, Sergei Bobrovsky. He wasn't going to be that goaltender in Philadelphia. He was that goaltender because of, I would submit, Ian Clark. And some goaltenders just click with their goaltending coach. For Bobrovsky and Ian Clark, it clicked. It was perfect. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And for Sean Burke and Mike Smith, ditto, the same thing. Is there a goalie coach? Is there a head coach? Is there a situation and environment where Devan Dubnyk, who, if you look, has been cheating on so many shots. Like that Nazem Kadri goal on Saturday. Oh, first of all, it's a perfect shot, but that shot doesn't go in if Devin Dubnyk's not cheating. Ditto for the Joffrey Lupo goal as well. Yet again, he's cheating to the left. Does that say to you that he doesn't have any confidence in his defenseman, or is he just misreading percentage plays? I don't know.
I would say option A, probably.
Probably, yeah. Well, that's a good point, too, because I mean, you've heard me make the point about Joe Meloche so many times. I think Joe Meloche, if he played with the Islanders or the Boston Bruins or the Habs or whatever in the 70s, we would have thought of Joe Meloche as one of the best goaltenders of all time. But poor guy ended up playing for the California Golden Seals, the Cleveland Barons, the Minnesota North Stars.
Right.
And so Joe Meloche isn't thought of like Billy Smith and Ken Dryden. He's just not.
Mm-hmm.
But you wonder if there is, you know, a lot of this, because his numbers up until this year were pretty good. Like, his save percentage was always pretty good. And even that was playing on a bad deep with a bad
defense.
And
that's why, at the end of the day, goaltenders are the NFL quarterbacks of hockey, okay? Because the right system and the right personnel in front of them can make them extraordinarily wealthy. But you take that personnel away from them, and you take that system away from them, and then all of a sudden they become extraordinarily ordinary. And that's the issue.
Hey, Jared Dillon, by the way, is this HC at noon? Jeff Merrick made the same point on the show last night about Dubnyk. But it's true. But how many people are listening to HC at noon that also listen to this podcast is what I would submit, nonetheless. It's a point that needs to be made.
It's the podcast for you. Listen, both Merrick and I are media machines. I mean, our output is extraordinary.
I don't know about that.
You have to understand that what the podcast essentially is the appendix to our other work. We make points in other venues and on other media, but then we come to the podcast and we have the time and we have the flexibility to flesh out these ideas.
You see, the rest of our professional lives are the jug of orange juice, but this podcast is a concentrate.
That's right.
This is where it all gets distilled from.
Exactly. The rest of our careers are just bloviating and yelling at people and being like, the Oilers are the worst team in the history of hockey. And then we come here and then we're able to explain nuance.
Okay. That's what
nuance.
We do.
That's right. All right. When we aren't being misogynistic, as I was again accused of being.
Why? What'd you do now?
Well, I got accused of being misogynistic and gender biased because I used the phrase "clutch the pearls," and I believe I said it in a exaggerated schoolmarm voice last week during the fighting debate. And I had to talk some people down off a ledge over the weekend that "clutch the pearls" was not meant to be equivocating the anti-fighting crowd with women, but merely comparing them to Maude Flanders on The Simpsons, a arch conservative, shocked by all things moderately shocking, religious fool.
Here's how I look at it. Everybody needs to take his or her lumps, whether each side of any point that you're on. And you know who takes more lumps than anybody? Your vegan hippie buddy. How often do I get blasted and how often do I throw it back? Never. Because you know what? Sure. You know? I got to take my lumps too, just like everybody else. So again,
exactly.
Like I was saying last week, can we all just calm down?
We need to calm down.
I thought
your point was really well taken on that score, which is that both sides have now become stereotypes of each other. You know, I call them clutch the pearls peacenicks and they call me a Neanderthal. Does it get us anywhere in this debate? No, it doesn't.
Nowhere, but
so,
I guess it's just fun
going back and forth with some people about fighting on Sunday. We're not opening up the can of worms again, but I am going to write on Puck Daddy this week a middle of the road, can we hold hands and sing Kumbaya column at some point about where I believe there might be some middle ground between Neanderthalic bloodlusters like me and Sunday school nuns like Adam Proto.
Okay, let me ask you this. I was thinking about this on the way in today because Patrick Coletta faces an in-person hearing with Brendan Shanahan and the Department of Player Safety. And I'm with you. I think he's going to get a dime thrown at him. I think he served the two and he's going to get eight more. I really believe that. Because, A, he's a repeat offender. He's the exact kind of guy they want to, you know, deal harshly with. And it's an easy suspension to make. It's not like, oh, well, Thornton ran into David Perron's face. We're going to have to sit him down for 20 games, which is politically a little trickier one to do. But Pat Coletta is a pretty easy one. But I was thinking about this. How about this for an idea? Because right now... all the money from players who get suspended go to the players' emergency relief fund for players.
All the monies.
The players that have fallen on hard times. I get that. I understand that. And this is not an affront to those people. I'm not trying to take your money away. But, hey, by the way, I wonder which players made those people the most amount of money. Anyway, as an aside, what if it didn't go to that fund, like as a way of sort of curbing violence, if indeed we want to curb violence? And I'm not sure that really in our heart of hearts we do, but I'll just humor myself and everyone else at the same time and make this point. Instead of it going to the emergency assistance fund, what if it went to the injured player? Like, what if Pat Coletta's, okay, right? Stick with me here. Like, what if Patrick Coletta's money that, you know, he's incurring through this suspension goes into the pocket of Jack Johnson? Would that make you think twice? Like, okay, Jack, sorry about, you know, the cross check in the face, the shoulder in the head, the whatever from Pat Coletta, but he is now going to write you a check.
That's pretty good.
What do you think, bud?
That's not a bad idea. I like the idea of as part of this punishment, you have to take the photograph with the giant publisher's clearinghouse check.
With the big smile and the thumbs up.
Yep, with the two players.
Thanks, Pat.
It's not a bad thought at all. Question of the day, ladies and gentlemen. Question of the day is, there are a lot of teams that are up and a lot of teams that are down right now in this wonderful league of ours. And the question for you is, which team's record, good or bad, is the absolute phoniest? Do not take the bait or the hook will pierce your cheek. Which one is the phoniest record, good or bad, in the league right now? PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com, @Wyshynski, @JeffMerrick on Twitter, #NVSW. A few people, one or two people, maybe 10, maybe 50, say that one of the two teams playing tonight could be phony.
The Toronto Maple Leafs and whom else?
Well, I was actually thinking of the Battle of the Unbeatens tonight between St. Louis and San Jose. But
you think they're phony records? Really?
I don't know. Maybe.
I would say the team that's sandwiched in the middle there.
A few people have said. With that, we will start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
You know, this isn't virgin territory. This is vintage Patrick Waugh. The yelling, the screaming.
NHL would be a lot more fun if guys like you and me ran it.
Are you new to this podcast? Is this your first time? Do I need to hold your hand?
I'm serious when I say, like, that guy's forgotten more than I'll ever know.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I'm just happy you got into Bruce Boudreau's pants yesterday.
Don't talk about fantasy hockey. It's not real hockey. Talk about real hockey.
It is hard to wrap your brain around the idea that Phil Kessel is in the same conversation as Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, and Evgeny Malkin.
Debate hockey.
I'm telling you, Jonesy, the guy can't play. He's a Russian.
I don't touch salmon at all.
Well, that's refreshing. Yeah, me too. Yeah. I'm also hybrid icing in my pants.
Icing happen when the puck come down, bang, you know, before the other guys. Mm-hmm. Nobody there, you know. Mm-hmm. My arm go comes out, then the game stop, then start up.
Pop culture.
The opening band is off the stage, and now here comes the headliner.
Right. Hey, he's the Jonathan Drouin of serial killers. He's obviously needs either some seasoning in Junior or he's ready for the show. Here comes the creepy part.
Creepy part? Is this 2 minutes away from my house?
Police do not believe that the 6 dismembered cats are accidental or the result of a predatory animal.
That right there, that conversation in Canada was considered foreplay.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
An epic new opening from producer Matt.
Yeah, that was really long. It went out, you know.
We'll see you tomorrow, folks.
Yeah, thanks for joining us in the American British Virginia podcast. Enjoy St. Louis and San Jose later this evening. Should be a doozy.
I will tell you whose record is not phony, by the way. That would be the 7-2-1 record for Espo's Road Strange, a.k.a. my fantasy team in the Puck Daddy Merrick vs. Wyshynski Fantasy League. A 7-2-1 record to start off week one. One win, 2 points behind Pedo Bear, which is currently leading the league as we speak.
I just found out what that was, by the way, and it's hilarious.
Oh, you didn't know what Pedo Bear was?
No, I had no idea. Dude, I'm so behind on everything. What do I spend my time doing? Right? Yeah, I know. Congratulations. Welcome to 2013.
Is your life enriched?
No. That's the thing. I was doing a sort of audit over the summer of all the unnecessary things that I have in my life and in my brain. I got to clean a lot of stuff out. I really came to that conclusion.
Joining us now on the line is a man that we are happy is about to class up the joint. He is a Hall of Famer.
He is an analyst for the St. Louis Blues, and he is on the podcast right now. He is Bernie Federico joining the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast. Hello, Bernie. How are you? Boyne?
Do we have Bernie there? Earth to Bernie. Oh, Bernie. There we go. We found him. There we go.
Yay!
Doing well, sir.
How are you? Well, Bernie, we've got a bit of a barn burner tonight. It is, of course, the Sharks. It is, of course, the Blues. It is a battle of unbeaten teams. For those fans, because I imagine, I would wager more fans have probably seen the Sharks early this season than the Blues, simply because of the Tomas Hertl mania going on. Tell us what the Blues are doing so right to be 4-0-0 at this point.
With Petrangelo and the Shattenkirk and the rest of the crew, they seem to play very solid defense. And Jaro Halak has been very good in goal. So it's been a team effort. You know, they work hard. They bought into Ken Hitchcock's system, which is to be, you know, very aggressive and very good in your own zone. So that's kind of what they've been doing. And consequently, they've been winning games because of it.
And let's face facts, too, about tonight's game. As much as, and I loved last year's, and the year before, mind you, as well, St. Louis and Los Angeles. I wish that was a Stanley Cup final. That's how much I really enjoyed that series. And I think all hockey fans that watched it felt the same way. Much like that series, Bernie, tonight is going to be a very physical affair as, true or false, St. Louis will try to run San Jose out of the rink.
Well, you know, that's a question that will be left to be answered yet. But, I mean, these two teams, you know, do have a history. They've met each other in a couple of times in the playoffs. They really don't like each other. So usually the games are very physical. But I think right now what I'm seeing with both these teams is, you know, they're very speedy. They skate very well. So, I don't know how physical the game is going to get. I think it could get there, but I really believe that right now both these teams, you know, are going to try to, you know, prove a point to each other. No one wants to get beat for that first time on the year. And, you know, again, the Blues, this is their fifth straight game at home. So before they go on the road right now, they want to get a good win under their belt. But, you know, I really believe that these two teams are have enough respect for each other. I don't think they're going to try to run each other a lot. I think they're probably going to play more hockey tonight than probably we've seen them in the past.
Going back to the goaltending, Halak's been amazing, as you said. Obviously, we all know Jake Allen acquitted himself well last year. He's down to the AHL. Are Brian Elliott's days numbered? I mean, we were talking about Edmonton to start the show. They need a goaltender, one assumes. Is Elliott on the way out, you think, as far as St. Louis goes? Or is this another case where we're all writing him off and he's going to come back and prove us wrong?
I think you're writing him off a little early. I mean, I really believe that Ken Hitchcock wants, you know, Jaro Halak to show what he can do this year. I mean, Halak, we all know what a good goaltender he is, what a great series he had going back when his days in Montreal when he, you know, played Pittsburgh and this and that. But, you know, he's had a couple of injuries over the course of the last couple of years and really has not been with the Blues when the playoffs time has come. He's not been there, and it's been all Elliott. So I think they're going to give Halak the run of the roost right now and see how he's going to respond. And he's been absolutely outstanding. I mean, he has spent all summer here in St. Louis getting in the best shape of his life. And, you know, he started out very well. But with Brian Elliott, I think everybody knows that he is a good backup. He's proved himself that he, you know, when things go wrong, when he needs to be in there, he's really carried this team and played very well. So, you know, what Doug Armstrong would do if Halak plays very well, I don't know if that Brian would be trade bait. Certainly, as you mentioned, Jake Allen played very well last year when he got the opportunity, and he's waiting in the wings. So, you know, how much strength the Blues have in that, I'm not sure. I mean, there's, you know, you've got three guys right there, but beyond that, you lose a goaltender, then what do you do? So I think that right now Brian is going to get some starts, and I think that just because of the schedule right now, it's been a real light schedule, and consequently, Hitchcock has just went with Halak because there's been no back-to-back games. But I wouldn't be surprised on the weekend here. The Blues have got, you know, Chicago on Saturday. I mean, should say on Thursday, and then they're in Winnipeg on Friday. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Elliott maybe going to the Nets on Friday in Winnipeg.
You know, Bernie, for the past few seasons, Louis Erickson has been the poster boy for the most underrated player in the NHL. And every time I watch Alexander Seen, I say to myself, maybe he should be the most underrated player in the NHL. Your thoughts on the, well, I guess I can't call him young Steen anymore. I still think of him as a Maple Leaf in some regards. But your thoughts on Alex Steen so far? That line with TJ Oshie and David Backes has been fantastic.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, watching Alex Steen every night, you know, if he is, I mean, to me, he's not underrated because we know how much, how good a player he is. You know, maybe he is underrated around the league, but I think that you can talk to most general managers, they take him in a second. Alex Steen is right now, in my opinion, the backbone of this hockey club. He plays both ends of the ice very, very well. He plays the point in the power play. He kills penalties and, you know, he plays with that edge. I mean, he is a leader in the locker room. He's a leader on the ice. And, if people don't know what he's all about, then yes, he is the most underrated player in the league. But, as he goes, this team goes, he was very sour at the end of the year last year when the Blues got beat out by the LA Kings. And I think right now he's on a mission. You know, he's got, like four goals, he's got 8 points already in the first four games, and it's not just what he does offensively; it's what he does away from the puck as well. And yes, he's this is one of the great trades that Doug Armstrong has made to be able to get Alex Steen away from Toronto and get him here, because he's really right now, in my opinion, the backbone of the hockey club.
Derek Roy, 5 points in four games, skating just under 14 minutes a night. How has he looked so far for the Blues?
He's fit in really well. Derek is the guy they wanted to bring in. They felt they needed some help in the middle with Danny McDonald retiring now. They felt they needed a true center iceman that was not only good on the faceoffs, but a good passer. And right now he's actually fit in very well, playing on the line with Stewart and with Brendan Morrow. They're getting their chances. They're getting not a lot of ice time, as you said, just around 14 minutes a game is not a lot of ice time. But I think Derek has fit in really, really well, and I think that as the season progresses, I think he's going to fit in more and more, especially on the power play. I mean, this is a team that wants the scoring from all the lines, and to have another talented center iceman like Derek Roy has really helped out here as well.
We've seen it now in St. Louis for four games. Your thoughts on the new icing rules, Bernie?
Well, it's been pretty inconsistent right now. I mean, I know that our players here, the Blues, they voted against it, and I think it's still too confusing. I mean, things happen so fast, the game is so fast, and I think it's been very difficult on the linesman, trying to keep an eye on what the goaltender is doing, trying to make that decision at the hash marks, and with as fast as the guys go. I mean, I think it's a disadvantage for the teams that have really quick forwards, because the decision they could be almost even at the hash marks when the whistle goes, and you know that the forward's going to beat the defense of the puck anyway. So I understand the premise of the rule to try to protect the defenseman, especially from getting injured in a race for the puck. But right now it's a little confusing, and I don't know if the guys are liking it or not. But there's been too many times that I think that the whistle has gone where it shouldn't have, and a lot of times where it should have gone and it didn't.
Yeah,
I think the linemen are having a hard time getting used to it too.
And here's my couple of beefs that I have about it. But one of the big ones is I think you'd agree with me, Bernie, that the officials, the linesmen specifically, already have too many things to do right now. Too many things to keep their eye on. And secondly, and again, watching last night, watching linesmen speed to the dot, to see if the defenseman can beat the forward, you wonder, are we not burning out linesmen as well? Because where a player can go off and rest for a couple of minutes before he comes back on the ice, you're expecting a linesman now to do another sprint, to watch another race, but he doesn't get to go off for a rest. He stays on the ice and skates more. I worry about the fatigue of the linesman showing up in the third period more than anything else.
That's an interesting. I never thought of that way, but there certainly could be some thought into that. And I mean, let's face it. I mean, some of these linesmen are almost as old as I am now already. I've been retired for over 20 years, so you bring up a good point there. But I mean, I've talked to a couple of linesmen about it, and they said it's been very, very hard, very confusing for them. I think that they. Make it the hash marks. I mean, that's not a lot of space between the hash mark and the red line, and you can't even tell whether the goalie's going up to play the puck too. So, it's hard, and I don't know. We'll have to see how the GMs and the players think about it, but I mean, maybe they'll tweak it or do something with it as the year progresses, or even wait until next year. But I do understand that they want to stop players from getting hurt, and I think that's probably the most important thing that they've got with this.
Well, like everything else in life, Bernie, everything can be solved with lasers. Just put lasers across the ice. You know, if a laser can tell someone when I'm entering a supermarket, it certainly can tell the linesman who reached the dot first.
Well, you know what? I hope we don't go to that. I think we still need human error, guys. I mean, I think that's... I mean, it wouldn't be any fun if you couldn't yell at the referee, the linesman, every once in a while. So I think that's a good thing, and I think they like that, too. And they're a big part of the game. They really are. And, as all of us, our former players, understand, is that they're a big part of what goes on with the game. And I think as you... finish playing and this and that, you understand how hard their job is more and more as you end up watching. And especially now, the game has got faster and faster now, and these guys do a great job, and it's a very difficult job to do.
Now, that said, though, I mean, I agree on the human error part, and Merrick and I are both extolling the virtues of that Toronto-Edmonton game over the weekend because it was so many mistakes that it made it to be just amazingly fun 80s-style hockey. But where are you on video review of some calls on the ice? I mean, obviously, we know goals are reviewed, that kind of thing. Would you like to see some sort of check and balance on the officials when it comes to, say, goalie interference or what they were going to do this year with the high sticking?
Absolutely not. No. I actually believe, to be honest with you guys, I'd like to see us go back to one referee and two linesmen. I think that there's too much of almost like a competition between the two refs when they're out there, who's going to call this or that. And I know that obviously with only one ref and as fast as it is, some of the calls would be missed, but at least it would be a lot more consistent than what we're seeing now with two guys. And, with all the cameras in the buildings, some of the stuff is not going to get away with. I mean, like the spearing or, the infractions that may happen behind the play. If everything was reviewed and you fine guys for doing something ignorant or whatever it is, I think you could, still do a good job policing the game itself. But, I'm probably, talking to a wall by saying that, but I really would be honest. I would like to go back to one referee because I think the guys do a better job by themselves than they do with two of them.
Interesting.
We're speaking with, Hall of Famer Bernie Federico, analyst with the St. Louis Blues, and also someone, four 100-point seasons, 7 30-goal seasons in the NHL. Take us back to when you played and the game right now. When you looked up, you had a clean shot at the net, how much mesh did you see versus how much mesh do you see now, Bernie?
Well, you saw a lot more then than you do now. I mean, these goaltenders are a lot bigger. The equipment's bigger. The equipment now obviously has got bigger because it's a lot lighter and it's much more manageable. But, the goaltenders for the most part are all big guys. I mean, we had a lot of small guys, that were goaltenders, in our day. And, you had more to shoot at. But I think our day was more of a thinking man's game than it is today. Today, the shifts are 45 seconds and you go as hard as you can and, there's not a lot of imagination that's used out there on the ice unless you get the real skill talented teams. But the goaltending is much better than it's ever been, and I think the game is much better than it's ever been because you got the training facilities, you got the skill, you got four coaches, you've got video, you've got all kinds of different things. So and you got the evolution of the athlete too. The guys are getting bigger, stronger, and this and that too. So our games are different than they were, but overall, I think the game was great back then, and it's still a great game because I don't think there's a better game than hockey in all the world. Anyways, I'm pretty biased with that, but that's just the way it is, and I think the game will always continue to progress.
Hear, hear. Anything surprise you so far in the Wild Western Conference where? I guess we're all – well, first of all, the Western Conference has beat the living shit out of the East. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but the East record against the West is pathetic so far, not helped obviously by the Devils and the Rangers being so bad on the road. But what has surprised you, if anything, in the West so far?
Well, I don't think there – I mean, it's so early now that I don't think there is – I mean, obviously I think Colorado surprised everybody the way they've come out of the gate. I'm not surprised with what San Jose has done, and I'm not surprised with what Chicago or the Blues have done. Again, we've watched the West pretty closely here all the time, and I think it's going to be tight. I think the game here is a lot more physical in the West, it seems to me. I mean, it used to be the other way around, that the East was much more physical. I think the East, we're finding, is, you know, we've seen Florida, we've seen the Rangers coming here so far this year, and you know, they kind of play a different style of game. It's more of a loose style of game, you know, compared to what the West plays. So you know, I'm not really seeing any surprises, you know, other than Colorado, but I think it's going to be tight. There's a lot of good teams, there's a lot of good talent all over the league right now, and I think the West is going to continue to be tight. And, you know, with only 14 teams, you know, 8 making the playoffs, I think there's going to be a lot of nail biters going down the stretch as you know, as all the coaches try to get their systems in place. But, you know, from what I've watched, you know, games are fun, and I love the fact that there's more scoring going on right now at the moment. That's probably going to change and get tightened up as the year progresses. But, I really haven't seen a lot of surprises, but I've seen some real good hockey, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Hey, Bernie, last one for me, and we thank you for your time. I want to go back to your career as well, something I've always been curious about, because you know, you played 91 playoff games, but as far as regular season games, you ended on, in a lot of ways, a perfect number, game number 1,000. When you played that game playing with the Detroit Red Wings, did you know that was your last game?
You know what? Not really, no. You know what? I made that decision during the summer. You know, I'd made the move from St. Louis to Detroit in the trade, and then, you know, we didn't make the playoffs in Detroit that year. Jacques Demers had really brought me in, and he got fired in Detroit. So I was kind of up in the air, and, you know, I had a conversation with Jimmy Devolano, and, you know, I was going to have to move somewhere else. And, you know, with my family, I was, you know, I was 34 at the time, and that was the years when 34 was kind of the end of the line, 35 was the end of the line. I just didn't want to go ahead and move the family somewhere else and you know, put a stake in the ground somewhere else. So my wife and I made the decision that it was, you know, maybe time to just pack it in. So that kind of just was by total accident that it ended up at 1,000.
No kidding. Wow, that's amazing. All right, Bernie. Well, enjoy the game tonight. It should be a fun tilt. And we will
Be. We will enjoy it a lot. And, you know, whatever happens, it's only one of 82. And we'll see the Sharks a couple more times anyway. So it's going to be a fun, it's going to be a fun year. And, you know, we're looking forward to exciting hockey all season long.
My only hope is that David Backes beats up a Canadian. Doesn't matter which Canadian. Doesn't even have to be a Canadian that's going to be on the Olympic team. I just want to see him beat up a Canadian.
Every Olympic year he seems to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Bernie.
All right, guys. You have a good day.
Bernie Federko. Who was, if you'll recall, traded for, as it turns out, 2 coaches.
Oh, who were the coaches?
Adam Oates and Paul McLean.
No kidding.
Yeah. I remember Detroit fans... It was really tough because, you know, Bernie Federko, I mean, legendary scorer. You know, the Detroit Red Wings bringing a number 2 centerman to play behind Steve Yzerman. And Red Wings fans just, they resented Bernie because it cost the Red Wings Adam Oates. And so he sort of never got off on a good foot with the Detroit Red Wings. And he was right. It was his coach, Jacques Demers, who brought him in. But just never, it never clicked and it never worked out because Red Wings fans, like, how dare you get rid of Adam Oates?
Do you dare venture a guess as to which goaltender he scored his last goal against? Give you a hint. You want a hint?
Sure, because I don't know. I'm going to need a hint.
Chicago.
Scored his last goal.
Chicago, March 24th, 1990.
Would that have been Dom Hasek?
Greg Millen.
Oh, Millsy. Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah, Millsy. Millsy watched that biscuit fly by him, right? And he looked up and he said, oh, it's Bernie. He's good people.
He's good. I love Greg. Awesome guy. And what I loved most about Greg when he played, you ever see him in warm-up? Greg Millen in warm-up was hilarious because he didn't like to move a whole lot. He had to go out for warm-up. Don't think he liked going out for warm-up, but he had to. Part of the job. So Millsy would stand in the crease, all right? His skates locked. And all he would do is move his arms back and forth. Guys would be filling the net. And all Millsy would do is just move his arms back and forth, do that for a couple of minutes, and then skate off. Just did not want it. We got to get Greg on the – next time I get Greg on the show, I got to ask him about that. Because honestly, wish he would stand there and just move his arms back and forth on shots. Didn't go down, didn't go up, no side to side, nothing. It was the most hilarious warm-up of any goaltender I've ever seen in my life. What?
I like watching the goalies during warm-ups. And especially – you know what's been funny? How much attention is now paid to the goaltenders when they are stretching on either side of the red line? How many shots have we seen of Roberto Luongo stretching next to a goalie, stretching next to Corey Schneider, stretching next to Carey Price? It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, because that line really doesn't mean anything anymore. Like once upon a time, like that line that separated teams was
oh, yeah.
You didn't look at the other team. heaven forbid one of your pucks went on the other side. No, you just don't have conversations.
It might as well be the giant wall they built to keep the monsters out in Pacific Rim. And I was going to say kaiju, but I didn't think you'd understand what kaiju meant.
I said
monsters. Thank you.
You said the wall of China to keep the Mongols out. That's a reference I would have got. Mm. But nowadays, it's that, you know, that I don't know exactly when it happened. Maybe it's with the strengthening of the Players Association. I don't know. But where once upon a time that line was sacred and you didn't cross it and there were no conversations, there was no crosstalk, now, every goalie sits there, lies there, stretches out, and talks to the other goalie.
Because let's face it, the mindset of the enemy is my enemy has gone by the wayside. I mean, they're all friends. They're all millionaires. They're all fat and happy. There's no longer the guy wearing the sweater on the other end of the ice I want to murder. I want to spear him with this stick before the game even begins.
Did you know that back in the day, I mean, we're talking like 50s and 60s here, you would get fined if you got caught talking to someone from the other
Precisely.
Team?
Precisely. Oh, it's complete. The dynamic between these players has completely changed over time, where there was that mindset of you know, we are warring armies going against each other, to now it's being like, oh, hey, man, how's your cabin? Oh, my cabin's good. How's yours? Good.
Hey,
yeah.
What lake you on? You on Lake Rosso or Lake Joseph? Oh, Rosso,
I'm over,
hey? Oh yeah.
Oh,
nice,
I'm over on Lake Taves.
But you know what it is? I mean, that was back when it was a six-team league and there was not a lot of player movement.
Right, exactly.
Now with free agency and guys back and forth and changing sweaters all the time. Listen, I'm not going to be that old cranky guy. It was better in the 50s and 60s. It was real hockey and you hated the Habs and you hated the Leafs and the Blackhawks. But there is something to be said for that. Like it did seem as if they were playing for keeps more so then than they are playing for keeps now.
Do you think that technology has played into that? I mean, do you think fact that these guys can email and text each other from across continents now and maybe keep in touch in a way that where in the past it was only a phone call that could do
have,
it?
They did have telephones.
Well, I know they had phones, but they didn't have the ready availability of other media.
You know what else they had back then too?
Letters?
They had bars, but I think they called them speakeasies. But they had like saloons that guys could go to and drink together at.
Would there be beers between teams after games?
No.
That's what I'm saying.
Never. You kid.
I'm talking about communicating with the enemy, not your teammates. Obviously, you're going to be friends with your teammates and former teammates and such like that. I'm talking about guys who meet up at the New York Photo Expo where all the NHL players get together and jerk each other off while people are taking awkward photos of them at NHL headquarters. And then they, what's your cellular phone number? Oh, what's your cellular phone number? And then they text each other after games. That's what I'm talking about.
They all have the numbers anyway from the Players Association. I think it's a couple things. I think it's free agency, and I think it's the rise of the Players Association. Whereas once upon a time, players were polarized from one another. You know, it's the famous story of Gordie Howe, who for years was getting screwed over by the Detroit Red Wings because of his salary. Gordie was a very shy guy who would ask for, you know, a raise because, you know, Jack Adams would say, well, how much more do you want to make this year, Gordie? And Gordie's like, oh, I don't know, maybe an extra $100. And it wasn't until Bobby Bonn showed Gordie Howe his paycheck that Howe went berserk. He said, you're making what? And this is what I'm making? And that was in a lot, and that's when Taylor said, "Gordy, I told you, like we're getting hosed here."
you bring up an interesting point, though. I mean, what you're essentially saying is that the rise and growth of the NHLPA is one of the reasons why there's less animosity between players.
Absolutely,
yes?
Absolutely.
Okay,
100%.
Okay. So the rise and growth of the NHLPA can, I think, also be attributed to the strength of the commissioner's office over the last 20 years. So in essence, what you're telling me is that the hate that used to exist between players has just simply been transferred to hate of Gary Bettman.
Yeah. I need to think about that a little bit more, but offhand, like that,
it's been
that hatred has been displaced. Yeah.
It's been
there isn't that hatred between players anymore. Now, and it flares up every 7 or so years when the CBA needs to get negotiated again.
Yep. Yep.
That's when it really comes out.
Fight the real enemy.
But you know what? I mean, we talked about this during the lockout too, and God, I don't want to go back to those shows, but we might have to one day, Greg. No one ever blasts their own owner, but there is much to, if you're a player with the Calgary Flames, and you just want to blast Bettman, think about Murray Edwards. If you're a Boston Bruin, don't blast Gary. Think about Jeremy Jacobs. Like,
I'd like to put together a best of all of our lockout shows.
Oh, that'd be a cozy 5 minutes.
Listen to Greg stumble over his words as he discusses escrow.
Escrow is a percentage of a thing that's also how you take the, if you take the number, right, and then you divide it by the.
Listen to Jeff Merrick talk about how crooked all everybody is in this situation.
No, you know what?
He's mad at everybody.
Every sentence would trail up because we're really, not really sure about what we're saying. So we're trying to convince ourselves at the same time that we're speaking. Every sentence would trail up like that, like little.
Listen to Greg and Jeff be complete shills for Donald Fear.
I think Donald Fear is a great leader.
Today's poll question is: Donald Fear excellent or really excellent? It would be like it was so bad because like everybody, right, either became amateur accountants or actuaries. Like all of a sudden, we knew the sophistication of pension plans. What? I know the guys from Pension Plan Puppets. I love their blog. It's one of my favorites. That's as close as I've come to being an actuary. I read Pension Plan Puppets.
Listen to Jeff and Greg celebrate minutia.
Can you believe there actually was a Twitter feed dedicated to an empty podium?
It's the best of Merrick versus Wyszynski. Lockout edition.
What are we going to be doing when the next lockout happens? We're still going to be doing a podcast or will something different come around?
Well, you're quite older than me, so you'll probably be dead.
I'll probably
I will do solo shows in 2020 talking about they've got to close the loopholes on these bonus clauses.
Who's gonna scream about Sprague Cleghorn or Howie Morenz if I'm not here?
That's true. I brought up bonus clauses, and I do want to mention this because I blogged about it on Puck Daddy today. The utter absurdity that Jerome Iginla is 5 games away from making more in a bonus than he will make in base salary this year.
Did you see their power play yesterday, Boston?
Yeah.
Why is everything built around Jerome Iginla?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Well, because he, I mean, if you read the quotes after the game, because they were asking about this, because he's had 19 shots on goal without a goal so far this year.
Yeah.
They love his shot. They love his shot to the point where they're going to build the power play around that shot.
Didn't they find that out in Calgary? I mean, just one-timers from the half wall. Well, that used to work, but his shot doesn't have that same sizzle anymore, does it?
Yeah. It's a weird deal because, well, maybe it's not that weird when you consider how amateur hour that power play has been over the years for Boston. I mean, you know, they win the cup basically with the worst power play in hockey, right? So maybe they are looking to reinvent things a little bit. And
well,
they bring
in
a guy who's an elite, used to be an elite offensive talent, and they decide to filter everything through him.
And you saw something, we have seen this before. Zdeno Chara standing in front of the net on power plays. But also, who's anchoring? Torrey Krug. Now, Torrey Krug can fire it, right? Like, Torrey Krug's a... He's got a bullet of a shot back there. But you have Torrey Krug anchoring that power play and Big 33 standing in front of the net.
Well, Big 33, unless he's facing down Pavel Datsyuk. Did you see Zdeno Chara morph into Brian Gianta as Datsyuk danced around him? That's amazing.
A perfect pass, too. I mean, the whole thing sort of hinges on, you know, a bouncing puck that just skips over the stick of Patrice Bergeron. Mm-hmm. And then back the other way, the hockey stick turns into a magic wand. Oh, by the way, does that guy have like a canoe paddle for a blade or what? Like, I love Pavel Datsyuk's blade. Like, just look at that, but it is a canoe paddle. It is not a regular, it is a bigger, he may have the biggest blade in the NHL, like, commensurate with the size of the player.
My hockey porn, my hockey gear porn moment was in the St. Louis Rangers game last week. The bend on Tarasenko's stick when he fired that puck past Lundqvist was just gorgeous. My God.
Were you wearing dark pants?
It was looking. All of a sudden, you were looking at the letter L. That's how severe the bend was on the stick. It was amazing. I want to go back to Iginla though. Like, dude, he has a contract in which when he reaches the 10 game mark, which is quite the milestone, he gets close to $4 million in bonus money.
Yeah.
I mean, what? We spent the entire lockout talking about trying to close loopholes
and
get rid of cap circumvention.
Doesn't that float into next year, though, those bonuses?
He's got a one-year contract.
Does the full amount of it, because I'm not sure about his contract, does the full amount of it count against the cap this season, or does any of it float into next year?
I don't know if it does, or I forget if it does or doesn't, but he's got against the cap this season, which of course is the more important season because it's when the cap is at its lowest point.
Yep.
$1.8 million against the cap and all this bonus, $4.2 million in bonus money floating out there.
They lost Nathan Horton, and they wanted to replace him on a quickie contract with maybe who's going to become the new hockey mercenary in the NHL, the new Jaromir Jagr, Jerome Iginla. Who may just go hopping from team to team.
That might be completely accurate, by the way.
Might.
I mean, as far as like, you know, the next mercenary, that's a good point. I never thought about that.
Have one timer will travel. Jerome McGinley.
Couple of news and notes. Marty Biron and Aaron Asham passed through waivers. Questions about whether this is the end of the road for Biron. Obviously, if you've ever talked to the guy, dude's got a career in broadcasting whenever he wants it. So this could be the end of the road for him.
Let me follow up then to a point that I was making on the podcast last week about Tomáš Hertl. All right?
This adds
to the week-long resume. So first start in the NHL, 7 goals, gets a player suspended, and may have ended Marty Biron's career.
Noteworthy, you know, Alex Chiasson for all, you know, congratulations on having a great rookie year. You've not ended a goalie's career yet, sir. So, I mean, you've got some time to go. Speaking of Dallas rookies, Valerie Nichushkin, a healthy scratch tonight for the Dallas Stars. Stars merely saying, according to Mike Hajka, that they're hoping maybe this can clear his head a little bit, get him to not press as much. A dynamic preseason followed by a disappointing regular season so far for the talented Dallas rookie.
If I'm the KHL, I'm jumping all over this. There is a jihad against Russian hockey players in the NHL. Come back to the motherland. Come back to Russia. Come back to play in the KHL. Look how our young superstars are treated in the National Hockey League. Happens. There will be... What do you think the outcry will be for Valery Nichushkin getting scratched tonight? Anywhere close to what happened to Yakupov for two days?
Not at all.
Where was
not
the biggest storm in Canada? They've sat down Neil Yakupov. That'll show him.
By the way, has there been a more bizarre line of thinking than Don Cherry comparing Tomáš Hertl's goal with Jamie Benn's goal? Did you see that? He said,
look, Jamie Benn. Oh, Jamie Benn scores a goal, no big deal, I just keep on playing.
Jamie Benn has like close to 200 games in the league,
I know. And he's captain of the Dallas Stars. I know. He's not a fresh-faced rookie who's not that far removed from, you know.
That was a weird-ass comparison. That was a weird-ass comparison.
That was a stretch.
As we're heading towards the end of the program, we have to get to the question of the day, and I'm sure this team will be mentioned in the question of the day a few times. Yep. Colorado Avalanche right now 5-0-0, +14 goals differential for the season, which is the second best in the National Hockey League behind San Jose. San Jose, by the way, if you want to know the numbers coming into the game tonight, San Jose first in offense, second in defense. St. Louis second in goals for average, fourth in goals against average. But Colorado, +14 goal differential, 5-0 on the season. How are they doing it defensively, sir?
We talked about this on Hockey Central last night with Billy Jaffe and John Shannon, and we sort of broke down what the Colorado Avalanche are doing specifically in their own zone, where they are doing something that you're starting to see more and more of, specifically in junior hockey. So right away you say, uh-oh, this is Quebec Rampart style. Well, it's not just Quebec Rampart's, the QMJHL where Patrick Waugh coached, but it's a lot of teams in the OHL and WHL as well. They're playing man-to-man in the defensive zone. Okay, I talked to a coach about 20 minutes before we came on the podcast today. He said, explain what is happening here and how you break it and what other teams normally do. And he said, well, there is an element of man-to-man that happens in pretty much every team's defensive posture. And it mainly happens when a puck is directed or about to be directed towards the net. You switch from playing zone to playing man-to-man. When there is a direct threat that puck is going to the net, you are going to start to play a little bit more of man-to-man. Now, what a lot of teams will do is they'll play what's called a swarm defense, which is essentially outnumbering the player with the puck. And it only really happens when the puck is in a quote-unquote safe area, when there isn't the idea that the puck is – this isn't the notion that the puck is going to be thrown on the net. When the puck is considered to be in a soft area, that's when you see teams now throw either two or three players on the player with the puck. Right? Oh, there's no threat to send it on net. Let's send three guys to get it, force a turnover, and we're going back the other way. Vancouver plays this way. The St. Louis Blues play this way. The San Jose Sharks play this way. So if you're watching the Vancouver, San Jose St. Louis game, watch for this specifically tonight in the game. Swarm defense. Puck in a safe zone in a defensive area. Watch for the swarm defense. Pittsburgh plays that same way as well. But man-to-man is unique in a lot of ways. And it's instant. When the Colorado Avalanche, when the puck gets into their zone, everybody has their man, and they're sticking to it. It's usually played by a stronger team where you can outwork, and that's what Colorado is doing as well, too. Let's not forget, Colorado is just playing like bastards. They are outworking everybody right now. It's When you're playing man-to-man, it's usually used by the stronger team or a team with a higher, here comes the hockey cliche of the day, higher compete level. And the way you break it is not unlike basketball. This coach told me you need to force switches. So two guys to take away a puck. You force switches and you do what's supposed to be illegal in the NHL, but very legal in basketball, picks. That's what you have to do.
Pick plays.
That's what Colorado is in. One, they are just flat out outworking everybody. And two, they are playing man-to-man in their own zone. Every team has an element of it. They are picking it up right away and outworking everybody on it. They're not playing that swarm style. Wait till the puck is in a safe area. Like, how many times have you seen the puck goes in the corner and you have two defensive players on one offensive player who has the puck? All the time, because you're forcing an odd man situation, and that's where you want the puck turned over, because there's no threat that the puck is going to go towards the net. That's where the aggression right. comes in. When the puck is going to go towards the net, everybody grabs a man. But you look for those soft, safe areas, and you play what's called swarm defense. It's happened for years now in the NHL, but now I wonder if this becomes now more of a thing in the NHL, because every coach will ape what's successful from another coach, whether more teams start to go to that man-on-man defense. Just have a look. When you're watching your games tonight, whether you're watching, and I think St. Louis, San Jose is an excellent one to watch for, just watch the elements of when a team snaps into man-to-man versus more of a zone coverage.
So the question then becomes, does that mean eventually we see them regress because teams are going to figure this out?
Yep, absolutely. Oh, of course. Coaches will always, okay, they're playing this way, this is what we have to do, and that'll be the morning skate. Guys, this is what they're going to do when we have the puck in their zone, right? This is how we're going to break it. We're carrying the puck. Let's force picks and let's force switches and try to confuse the Colorado Avalanche. But right now, they're what, six games into the season? So far, it's working. Let's have the audit about 20 games into the season. Much like we look at goaltenders, you know, don't look at the body of work after 10 games. Let them go around the league once or maybe even twice and then let the book get written and see how the goaltender adapts. Let's see how Patrick Roy adapts after everybody realizes, oh, yeah, they're playing man-to-man in the defensive zone. Which, listen, if someone like me has figured it out, everybody has figured it out in the NHL. Trust me.
Question of the day. You tell us which teams are a bit counterfeit. Which records don't you believe in? Who are the big fakey phonies in this league right now? The frauds.
Bring in the frauds squad.
Michael Murtaugh believes one of the frauds is playing in the Battle of the Unbeaten tonight. They are the San Jose Sharks. Every year at the beginning of the season, they come out of the gate strong, and everyone jumps in the bandwagon only to find that they have a huge slump midway through the season and then get beaten in the playoffs by a team better than them every year. San Jose's a fraud. Trigger 23, without a doubt, it has to be Colorado. There is no way their goaltending can continue to perform at the level that it has. And the same goes for their shooting accuracy. Patrick Roy has them playing pretty good hockey, but they're also getting lucky. And at the end of the season, they'll be a bubble team. Yeah.
Who's going to be a bubble team? Sorry, I was just reading tweets. Who's going to be a bubble team?
Colorado.
Ooh. Okay, yeah, I can see it happening. I could. Do you think that the Buffalo Sabres have a fraudulent record? I can't believe they're this bad. I really can't. Tonight, they have a back-to-back. Tonight, they're playing against the Islanders. They have 1 point on the season.
They've played this bad, though. I mean, like, their record is indicative of how bad they've been. It's not like you can point to them and say, the record is obscuring how hard they've played or how good they've been. I mean, they've been atrocious.
I wanted to follow this up when we were talking to Bernie Federico, and you made up the point about how the West is dining out on the East.
Oh, killing them.
But you know why? Because it's all
the Metropolitan Division is terrible.
No, it's because the Eastern teams have traveled west. Let's see what happens when the Western teams travel east. Like let's let both conferences flip flop. And now we're starting to see the Western teams come. Like we saw, you know, yesterday, you know, Edmonton playing Washington. Like now we're starting to see some Western team come east. Let's see what the record is when the trips go the other way from the west to the east.
This is true. But versus the Western Conference, the team Buffalo is 0-6-1. Philly 1-5-0.
Oh, they're bad.
Rangers 1-4-0. Devils 0-3-3.
Yeah, it's not good.
Washington's 2-4.
It's not good. Let's see what happens.
1-3-4-5.
Let's see what all sifts out.
There are six teams of the 16 that have winning records against the West. And most teams have played every team has played at least five games against the West except for Columbus, ironically.
point. Nah. You give them a favor, you keep giving them favors, right? Everybody else is to shove off west. Columbus comes east, and it's like, you don't even have to go to the west. Just do your thing, Blue Jackets. Don't worry about anything. Everybody can see the games in their time zone. It's great. Ryan Thomas, my vote for the phoniest record in the league goes to the Calgary Flames. No losses in regulation yet, but it's still evident that they are a young team that is going to get beaten down and finish at the bottom of the standings this year. I mean, of course agree with that. I think the Flames are the easy answer to this question because there's absolutely no way their goaltending isn't going to be complete dog shit by the end of the season. And obviously, if they've got just a scintilla of logic and good sense in that managerial team, Sean Monahan's going back to junior.
Really? Or do you say to yourself, you know what, the salary cap is going up. They have more money in Calgary than God. We can sacrifice the 1 year because he's really bringing out the best in Sven Berchi.
Here's the thing. I thought that Monahan would stay up. I predicted that he would, and I still predict that he will because I think the temptation to keep him up is going to be too great.
Because,
right,
hang on, part of it is because they are selling hope. And you need hope on
display.
Selling hope on
display.
Exactly. That's right.
Right. And, well, that and also at the moment they're in contention. And it's hard. If they send him back to junior and then they go in on an 11-game losing streak, I mean, it's hard for management to look at the fans and say, oops. Because then you're thinking to yourself, all right, maybe they could have been something this year had the kids stayed up.
Here's the thing. Here's the big test for the Calgary Flames. And here's where it may unravel starting tomorrow. Ducks, Sharks, Kings, Coyotes.
Right.
Those
on the
next,
road, right?
On the road. And then they got the Stars, and then they're back in Calgary.
Right.
Let's see where they're at.
Brian in Ottawa with a very unsurprising answer, considering he is Brian from Ottawa. The Toronto Maple Leafs, 5-1, despite being outshot and being one of the worst teams at faceoffs because they have incredibly unsustainable special teams numbers. Are they a product of Bernier, the Leafs, would you say?
Yes, right now. And even Randy Carlyle has said as much. You know, we haven't played a full, complete game yet. But just like last year, their record in some ways was phony because of, you know, unreasonably high shooting percentages from a lot of players like Nazem Kadri and excellent goaltending from James Reimer. Now, you should never have to apologize for having a great goaltender. He is, after all, part of your team. But I think the main reason why the Maple Leafs find themselves where they are right now, two, Jonathan Bernier. And also someone who doesn't get the credit that he deserves, Joffrey Leupold. 15 goals in the last 22 games with the Maple Leafs. This guy stays healthy. All he does is fill the net.
Isn't that a weird thing for hockey? Like, to say, oh, they're only good because of their goaltending. Like,
he's
like,
part of your team.
Yeah, like it is some sort of separate entity.
I don't get it.
That's me looking at the Patriots and being like, they'd be nothing without Tom Brady. Well, of course they'd be nothing, you asshole.
Yeah.
He's the best player on the team.
Well, if you take away Tim Thomas from the Boston Bruins, I've never bought that. The goalie is part of the team. Deal with it.
Mike Barba, I'm guessing some people will answer Colorado as the phoniest team in the NHL just based on their performance last year. But having gone to their game Thursday night in Boston, I would argue these guys are the real deal.
Because they're fun. They're fun to watch, too, right?
The defense might be uninspiring. And again, editorial note here. By uninspiring, I think he means the defense you expect to be terrible because they look terrible on paper. But they have had extremely strong play from their forwards in both the offensive and defensive zones to compensate. And the play of Varlamov and Jaguar has me thinking Francois Allaire was exactly what the doctor ordered. One more after that. This comes from Travis. Travis writes in, phony record Edmonton Oilers. Their record, much like teams are sometimes buoyed by unsustainably high percentages, is absolutely crushed by low ones. Although they are tied for 10th in goals for, their PK, save percentage, and goals against average are absolutely killing them. If they get career averages from Dubnyk LaBarbera so far this year, they probably have 3 to 5 more points and could be tied for second in their division. Random Penguin will probably score a bad goal from behind the net outside the blue line over Dubnyk's shoulder while he makes himself as small as possible tonight.
Wow.
That's a good line.
That's a really good line. Yeah, I think your goaltending, they... How many times do I have to say this thing? I won't even bother. The 7,100 with the goaltending thing. But if they get a couple of saves, it's entirely different. Still, that blue line has to play a lot better. And that first line still, to me, has been, by first line standards, not a first line.
Where are you? Who is your fraud and who is your fraud good team, fraud bad team right now as far as phony record?
My fraud team right now, as far as they have a really bad record, is the New York Rangers. I just can't believe that that team with that talent, with that coach and with that goalie, can be this bad.
Mm-hmm.
I just refuse to believe it. And as far as fraud team that is good, that I think is going to come back down to the pack, Colorado. They're riding high right now. They're grooving on Patrick Waugh. They're riffing on the Conn Smythe Trophy Stanley Cup winner. Give me see what happens after 20 games.
Yeah, I'm going to go Toronto. I agree. I mean, all the metrics are there to say that they're not going to be able to sustain this, and obviously you don't expect Bernier to be lights out the entire season. Although, I'm sure we said the same shit about Bobrovsky last year, so one never knows.
And if he is lights out and this time into January, Team Canada.
Potentially.
Maybe.
By the way, I think that's one of the reasons why Holtby's been extraordinarily human this year. Last year it was the contract hanging over his head and trying to get those details worked out earlier in the year. This year, his name has been mentioned so many times as being that third guy behind, say, Luongo and insert veteran here, that I'm wondering whether or not he's completely pressing right now. And that's one of the reasons why.
Did you think Saturday's Montreal-Vancouver game was a win for Carey Price over Roberto Luongo for the Olympics? Because Price was lights out.
I still think at the end of the day they bring Luongo no matter what, but I think that Price, as far as trying to get that second spot, that does a lot of good for him for sure.
But what do you do if you're Vancouver and you're hearing things like Roberto Luongo after the game saying, "Well, I didn't give up that goal." I didn't give that up.
I know you had it. We're talking about the Ham Hughes thing, that complete mess of a shorthanded goal. Where the Ham Hughes completely misplayed the puck and it went off of Luongo. I have less of a problem with that than you do. I don't think it's – like, sometimes you've got to throw somebody under the bus because it's their fault. And Luongo shouldn't be like, well, it was a complete team breakdown. Ham Hughes screwed the pooch. It's his fault that the puck went in. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem. Anyone with functioning retina knows whose fault it was for that goal. And I have no problem with Luongo stating the obvious.
All right. I don't know. I just don't know what that does in the room. Hey. Or if you're John Tortorella and you're hearing the goaltender throw the defenseman under the bus.
It is not Roberto Luongo's job to pump Dan Hamhuis' tires.
Yes, it is. He's on his team, for crying out loud. Come on, bud.
My fraud on the low end of the scale, if Toronto is a team that I think is overrated, my team with the phony record on the other end of the scale, I will stay in that lovely province of Ontario and say the Ottawa Senators are better than 1-2-2 on the season, without question.
Carlson has not been good.
He's not been good at all. I was actually looking through that as I was looking through. We had to do our top five defensemen for the USA Today Power Rankings.
Ooh.
And I was looking through the – I know.
The national newspaper ones.
Looking through the D-men, obviously Ryan Suter playing upwards of 45 minutes a night or someone so it seems.
Freaking awesome last night too against Buffalo. Jeez.
Rather high on that list. But, yeah, I was surprised to see the point total for Carlson not being where it should be. And they're kind of just finding their way right now. I mean, a negative five goal differential right now for Ottawa. A team that, by the way, is yet to play at home as well.
That's right. They open up seven games on the road.
Yep. So they're still trying to and your Ranger point, I think, is also in that ilk as well. And the Devils, too. I mean, the combined right now, the Devils, Rangers, and Ottawa have played one game at home, and that was an overtime loss for the Devils. So, yeah, you got to take a step back and see what these teams do when they get some home cooking, when they get their feet under them. But in Ottawa's case, I just think that they're much better than that record. I frankly think that they're the third best team in that division.
I think we just lost Wish. Wow. Well, at least you saved it to the end of the show. Just as I typed in to our producer, Matt Brown, "Hey, Maddie, I got a jet doing Tim and Sid in 10 minutes. Can you start rolling the music?" Just like that, you made Wyszynski disappear. You're that good. Not only just roll in the music and call it a podcast, you vanished, Wyszynski. Gone.
I just said, you know what? It's time to end it.
Oh, man, he was going on, too. He was all blah, blah, blah.
It wasn't good.
Maple Leafs going to suck. Blah, blah.
Hey, you still there?
Oh, I thought we were done with you.
I dropped off, and then it said my connection got refused.
Yeah, Maddie refused
it.
That
was me.
That was Maddie saying, "That's it. We've heard enough of your blabbering." Said it before.
Listen, The Ottawa Senators fans will not be silenced, sir. I was speaking on behalf of the people. It's the Senators Army.
The nation's capital of Canada?
Remember when that shirtless man came out during the before the game and addressed the Sens Army with his malfunctioning microphone? I mean, that's what I was trying to give voice to. By the way, the New Jersey Devils announced today that they are opening up a goal song competition. The goal song is changing, and it is your choice to submit the song that you'd like to have played during the one moment we all relish, which means Rock and Roll Part 2, as I wrote about earlier on Puck Daddy, if they are indeed changing the goal song, seems to have gone the way of the dodo. No more da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you suck at Devils games. The Devils are looking for fans to submit what they want for a new goal song.
So is it,
at any time...
Does it come from a list, or is it any song?
Submit your choice of song. And it's any song. The most submitted song as of October 18th we played during the... Oh, they're doing it so... They're doing it in intervals. There's a deadline for the 18th. The most popular song gets played on the 19th. Deadline for the 23rd, then the game on the 24th. Deadline on the 28th, game on the 29th. From October 30th to November 1st, all fans will have the ability to vote on their song of choice based on the songs that were previously played.
All right, that is our QOD tomorrow.
What should the new Devils goal song be?
Done. And you know what? I got to punt because I'm doing Tim and Sid here in 10 minutes.
Get the hell out of here. Thanks,
punt.
Everybody, for joining us today and answering the QOD and such. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.